Hi, it's Mike Collins. WFAE is in the midst of our fall membership campaign. We're bringing you this podcast without fundraising breaks. But first, I do have a quick pitch before we get to the show. Everything we do at WFAE is paid for by our listeners. Consider supporting Charlotte Talks right now for $20 a month, and we'll send you a Public Radio Nerd t-shirt. Give online at WFAE.org or call 704-549-9000. And thank you for your support. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. And now on to our relationship with technology and nature as seen through the eyes of artists. The Mint Museum opens an exhibit tomorrow, the first U.S. exhibit of works from the Dutch art collective Studio Drift. Their works have been praised for illustrating the link between nature, humanity, and technology. NASA tapped the group to be involved in this summer's commemoration of the Apollo 11 anniversary. The exhibit at the Mint is, and it's the Mint uptown, by the way, is entitled Immersed in Light, and we spend the remainder of the hour exploring it with one of the co-founders of Studio Drift, Lonica Hordain. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have you here. You, along with your artist partner, Rolf Nota, is that how you say his name?
That's how you say it, yeah.
You're the originators of Studio Drift.
We are.
That's your collective, your artist collective. What exactly is Studio Drift?
Well, Rolf and I started Studio Drift about 15 years ago, and we were just two students at the Design Academy, and we met, and we had similar ideas, and we were always dreaming and wondering about how the world could be, and we never really wanted to accept how it was. This was basically the starting point, our conversations, and this ended up in a studio based in Amsterdam, where we work with 40 people on projects that we initiate that make people feel related to themselves and to the natural environment by using technology mimicking nature.
But this didn't start with 40 people in a studio in Amsterdam. This was very small, and I'm told it was touch and go for a long time because you're breaking new ground. You're not painters. You're not traditional sculptors. As you say, you try to mimic nature through technology and art. Did you know you could do that?
No, I think we grew up and learned by the go. And we made many, many mistakes, of course, in the beginning because we came straight out of grad school and we just started our studio without knowing anything about business, anything about the art world and anything, hardly about technology, but we just knew what was possible and we just wanted to do it. And we always saw, we're looking for collaborations and other people that could help us.
We're going to talk about nature because I know that you get your inspiration, I think, from the natural world. I will talk about it now. You have said, I believe you have said, Lonica, that as a child, you spent a lot of time looking and just lying around in nature and watching ants and things like that, and that it was a total coincidence that one day you picked a dandelion from your garden and you discovered its head was exactly the same size as an LED light bulb. That's something that would never have occurred to me, I suppose. But you then started gluing onto the surface of the LED light bulb these little parachute seeds in a dandelion. When a dandelion goes to seed, it has that fluffy appearance, and you were picking those little seeds off and gluing them on to a light bulb, one by one by one. So you were essentially creating an electric LED dandelion.
Exactly. This sounds insane.
It sounds insane. It sounds incredibly laborious.
And this was my graduation project, but we never thought that this would be the basis of our studio. And still, 15 years later, we run a studio where we every year pick 15,000 dandelions in the fields, and we dry them, store them, and all glue them on LEDs.
How long does that last? Do they last in that? Once you spend all the time gluing them on the LED, will they stay there and be viable for your project?
They are seeds, and seeds are made by nature to last forever. I mean, if you keep them dry, they can just last. And we don't even spray them or do anything with them. But Yeah.
So somebody would say, why would you want to do this? And I have seen photographs and I think a little short film of what this looks like when you light these up with the LEDs. It's breathtaking.
It is. It's touching. And when you see a dandelion, you don't think about that. Nobody wants them in their gardens. But actually, they're exceptional creatures, like everything else in nature. And we aim for people to look at that in a bit better way. And when you light them up and put them in a museum, and we have incorporated that in an electrical circuit that grows in the Mint Museum right now, you'll see that it has a very special something. And we should not take that for granted.
And you call that piece Fragile Future.
Exactly. It's a merging of technology and nature. They really are coming together, but it looks very natural. It doesn't look frightening because for a very long time, we have seen technology as almost the enemy of nature. But we believe that those two have to be together in order to get to the next phase in the world.
You work a lot with light.
We do.
Exclusively with light? Is light always a part of everything you do?
Not always, but it's important. Light is not something you cannot grab or touch. And also we work with movement. Movement and light are the most important elements in our work. So we also develop a lot of robotics because we want people to feel the work. And light makes you feel different. Movement as well.
You were actually in the early days, and maybe you still do, but I read that in the early days of your work, along with your partner Rolf, that you were actually inventing the mechanics that make some of these things work, because some of your pieces move. They actually physically move all the time. And you were working on the mechanics, and some of those mechanics have gone on to other uses in industry now. Right?
Well,
I mean,
we have... Well, maybe you exaggerate a little bit, but, you know, we have... invented the wheel multiple times, doing things maybe that other people already did, but we always want it in a very specific way.
Right.
It has to move in an exact way how it brings a certain feeling to the audience. And we haven't, I don't think it really has gone into an industry so far, but...
A lot of your pieces, and the ones that I've seen, and I haven't seen all of them, but if you everything is on the internet today, so you can go and see a lot of this stuff, are awe-inspiring. That's the only way to describe them. And it's, you know, people love Christmas trees, and they love Christmas trees because they're beautiful, and they're beautiful in part because of the lights on the tree. And you did something even more spectacular called, I think it's called, the Tree of Tenere. Is that how you say it?
Tree of Tenere.
Tenere.
Yeah.
You built a full-size, enormous tree that people can actually climb and get into, but you also lit every leaf with LED lights, multiple LED lights. How long did that take? How do you engineer a piece like that? People can get in the tree.
Exactly. This was actually a collaboration that we did with a couple of people from Silicon Valley. It was Zachary Smith and... now I forget because
it's okay.
But he came up with this piece. And basically, we were not involved in the first part. And it was presented at Burning Man. We were asked to work with them on the programming in order to get this reaction with the crowd. And then after Burning Man, we realized how incredibly difficult it is to make a tree that is for outdoors and has to last forever and has like hundreds and thousands of electrical connections. So currently, as we speak, we're working on developing that tree in a way that it's very sustainable, that it looks more natural, and that it can actually be something that people can enjoy for many, many years, and not just for... Because we did it at Burning Man with these people, and after Burning Man, I mean, with all the dust and all the problems there, it really needed to have an upgrade. So we're working on that right now. It's a lot of work, but it's amazing to do because it brings to an audience, it connects audiences together, and this can go up in public spaces.
Yeah.
We're working on several projects in the States for that.
You have that. You have a piece that you did for NASA that uses drones that fly in the sky and imitate the patterns of sparrows, but they're lit from by these little lights, and they move through the night sky, and it's breathtaking. I don't know how else to describe it. But where does the money come from? That must cost a fortune to do that.
Well, yeah, for the drones, that was very hard. We couldn't do it for many years because we didn't have the money, of course. Right. But in the end, we found sponsors. And we brought several tech companies and sponsors together. It was very stressful because to one sponsor we said, we can do it. And to the other, to the tech company, we said, we have the money. But it was all coming together at that time. But we do need external funding sometimes for the big projects that we do.
I was watching a short film about you and your partner, Rolf. And in it, one of you said, and I forgot which one of you said this, that when you look closely at nature, you discover just how complicated and how logical it is at the same time, to the point where you begin to understand that perhaps nature is the most technological thing about our environment.
All the technology we develop is much less complex than nature. In the end, what we have found out in the last 15 years, whatever we try to reach what nature is doing, we can never get to that point because we cannot grow. We cannot really change shape like a butterfly, a caterpillar becomes a butterfly, something like that is, we cannot imagine that. I mean, everything that's living can adapt to its environment, and we humans cannot make those adaptive systems. I think that's why we always, at a certain point, technology fails, because we cannot endlessly adapt to situations, and that is what nature can do. It's incredible.
So this work, how many pieces? Is it five pieces at the Mint?
Yes, that's right.
This is going to be at the Mint Museum. It opens tomorrow. I know you're speaking about this and your exhibit tomorrow at 6:30 at the Mint Museum.
Tomorrow we have a lecture at 6:30, and it opens tomorrow, yeah.
Okay, and this is a coup. The Mint Museum considers this quite a coup, because this is the first installation of your work in a solo exhibit in an American museum.
That's correct.
How did this happen?
Well, we already met with a curator, Annie Carlano, more than 2 years ago, I think maybe almost 3 years ago. And she was very early to recognize our work. And we got to talk and got interested in knowing more about each other. So she came visit our studio, and then we came up with the idea to make a solo exhibition. And in the meantime, our work became more famous, and it lifted off, and now we're here at the Mint. It's very exciting.
Now you're stuck. You're locked in. So this is going to feature five of your works. There are four on the third level of the museum and one on the fifth. On the fifth, it's called Coded Coincidence. It's described as an immersive work for visitors, a collaboration between your organization, Studio Drift, and the Mint Museum.
That's right.
Created for the Mint.
Absolutely.
What is it?
It's an installation, it's a room that you can enter. And we are inspired by elm seeds. These are the little seeds that in springtime fall off the trees, and they pile up in the streets, and they make these beautiful rotations because they're meant to be taken by the wind. And there is this coincidence in it that it can just land everywhere. And we created an installation with 32 fans that we can control and steer the wind, and we can steer seed-like particles and through that space and experiment with how we can have part of control of something natural and part not. And people can enter that space and experience that sensation of the wind swirling by and all these particles, but they have to accept that they get some particles on their clothes and in their face, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's like going to Butterfly World in Florida. You got to accept that the butterflies are going to land on you.
Exactly.
There's another exhibit called Amplitude, and this is, I'm not sure how to describe this, but they look like metal-tipped glass rods hung from the ceiling, and then they undulate. And it's almost an entire room. It's a corridor where these things undulate. And so you're doing what? You're mimicking wings?
It can be a wing, it can be a wave, it can be a spine, but it's movement. So movement is one thing moves and the next thing moves and the next. It's like this continuous thing. And it's programmed on, so you watch almost a wave going up and down in a certain speed. But that speed is programmed in a way that you get very calm. Last night we had the first dinner for the donors of the museum, and when they entered the room, everyone got quiet, and it was so nice to see that it really affected the audience.
We're out of time, but I have to bring this up because there was a terrible fire in Paris at Notre Dame, and your group has suggested an idea, and you're collecting ideas to repair it. And one of your ideas is to collect all the plastic trash in the ocean and do what with it at Notre Dame?
Well, to restore the roof of the Notre Dame. I mean, we think we shouldn't restore what was in the past, but we should look towards the future and find sustainable ways to get to new cultural highlights.
Wow. I wish we had more time to talk about that. The work at the Mint Museum is called Immersed in Light. It opens tomorrow evening. It is unlike anything you've ever seen in Charlotte, and certainly unlike anything you've ever seen at the Mint Museum. It's a marriage of art, science, nature, and light. And it's at the Mint Uptown. Lonica Hordang has been our guest, one of the two artists responsible for Studio Drift. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.